From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. At the start of the year, Sacramento County Sheriff Jim Cooper made a controversial announcement. His department would no longer respond to mental health crisis calls unless a crime had occurred, was in progress, or someone was deemed to be in imminent danger. Sheriff Cooper joined our show back in March and explained that law enforcement officers are not trained mental health professionals, and there have been some bad outcomes in the past that he wants to prevent today. A piece out of CalMatters says this is part of a larger shift among law enforcement agencies worried about their own liability. CalMatters is a nonprofit newsroom that partners with public media newsrooms across the state. Lee Romney is an independent journalist and joins us to discuss her reporting, which looks at the early impact of this change in response. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So what led you to dive into this?
So I have been doing some in-depth journalism for an independent podcast and speaking to lots of families who have seriously ill loved ones living at home. And for a number of years now, they have noticed that law enforcement has been backing off more. So even when they'll come to the scene, often they'll say, hey, there's no crime. We're not going to go inside the home, even if that person is a danger to themselves or others, which is a criteria that would enable peace officers to take them for a psychiatric evaluation, even if they're not willing. So I'd been hearing, they won't do anything. They're telling us get a restraining order and then we'll come back. And I've been hearing that from across the state. So it was through some of these family member organizations that I heard about Jim Cooper, Sheriff Jim Cooper's rather hardline stance. So that's really how I came to it and got me interested.
So what stands out to you about Sheriff Cooper when you get a statewide look at how law enforcement agencies are evolving their response to these types of calls?
Well, I think Sheriff Cooper's, one of his key concerns is liability. And he has cited a federal appellate ruling, a Ninth Circuit ruling that involved Las Vegas police officers, where they lost qualified immunity, meaning that those officers could be personally sued. And I will say this case, Scott v. Smith, it's called, is of concern to law enforcement all over the state for obvious reasons. But a closer look at that ruling reveals that Sheriff Cooper's interpretation of it is, I think, overly blunt. He says, oh, if we lay hands on somebody who hasn't committed a crime, who's in a mental health crisis, we can lose qualified immunity and our officers could lose everything they've ever worked for. The ruling itself weighs out the same things that these kinds of excessive force rulings have weighed out for many years. It looks at, it balances the severity of the crime, in this case, no crime, the threat to officers. In this case, there wasn't a threat because they had disarmed him. He was armed because he was afraid that imaginary people were trying to hurt him, but he was cooperative. And whether he was resisting arrest, which he wasn't because there wasn't an arrest. And then they weigh those concerns against the level of force used. So in that case, body weight compression to the neck and chest. He said, I have paranoid schizophrenia. Please put me in the car. But when they went to put hands on him, he just freaked out. And so they put him face down. They applied compression to the neck and chest and he died. And so what the court said is, that level of force, A, you should have known that that could be deadly force, that could create, you know, asphyxiation. And B, you didn't try these other things, verbal de-escalation, calling in paramedics, or even calling in for extra law enforcement support to do a safer takedown. And so I think what I have learned is that lots of departments are examining how to do this better, because the level of force you can use is minimal. But some are following Sheriff Cooper's lead and saying, you know what, we are tired of being in this game. We aren't clinicians, and we just don't want to go unless there's a crime. And that creates some really concerning gaps. Several departments have said they are following suit.
And Sheriff Cooper spoke with you, and as I mentioned, he joined Insight, and we talked about this as well back in March. But I do want to play a clip of the interview that you had with Sheriff Cooper to just expand upon his viewpoints and his argument for making this pretty big change in response.
In the legislature, we always heard, hey, we don't want law enforcement responding to mental health calls. We heard that for a long, long time. I come back as sheriff, and I've seen a lot of bad outcomes in California and across the nation on mental health calls. Sometimes introducing a badge and gun can really make it go sideways. We don't want to criminalize mental health issues, and that's what it's been for so long. And I've heard from family members, well, hey, you've always done this. If you don't come, who's going to come? I don't want to put my deputies in a situation where they have to use deadly force on someone just because they were having a mental health crisis. It is sad when your largest mental health facilities are your county jails. And right now, we're expanding our mental health wards at the county jail. And that is insane. Someone shouldn't have to be arrested and go to jail to get help. What I'm happy about is this has spurred discussion statewide, nationwide on this issue where we're having discussion, talking about 988, other resources. So discussion is good, and it's got to be a change.
And just a little bit of background for Sheriff Cooper. He was a former state lawmaker, elected as a Democrat. The sheriff's office role is nonpartisan, but he has long been a Democrat. He was elected as sheriff in 2022, also was prior a Sacramento sheriff's deputy before serving in elected office at the state capitol, and is the first Black sheriff in county history. Just to explain, or I guess give some more context behind his point of view, when you take a statewide look, is he an outlier in this change of thinking?
I would say that he is or has been. You know, I spoke with Orange County Sheriff Don Barnes, who happens to be the president of the State Sheriff's Association. Don Barnes heard Sheriff Cooper present his policy at a law enforcement conference in March. And what Sheriff Barnes said is this really primed the conversation. So Barnes is a sheriff who said he'd been working for a while to try to, quote, get us out of social work. And I think, you know, with these liability concerns, seeing what Sheriff Cooper has done, he is also now saying, you know, the law says we may take people in for these psychiatric evaluations, but we're not legally obligated to do that. And we're going to start saying, you know, what he said was, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, you just might have to find a different way to get your son to the hospital. And so we know also that the Del Norte County Sheriff has said the same thing. We're not going to go out on these calls. Crescent City Police. And we are hearing about other departments that may come, and then they're starting to say no crime. So there is some momentum. You know, we don't know quite how deep that goes yet. But I have also been speaking with other departments who are not making that change. They're digging in to more collaboration with fire, paramedics, collaboration with civilian clinicians, and they're trying to triage these cases in sort of a smart way, but they are still making themselves available when somebody, for example, has a weapon or is volatile in a way that makes clinicians or firefighters feel that they can't go on scene. And that's a key difference, and that's the gap that Sacramento County is struggling with right now.
You also looked at the consequences of this change in response in the initial months of this announcement. One of the families that you profile is a parent named Susanna. Tell us about her home situation.
Yeah, Susanna, I found her because she actually called in to a commission meeting in February where this was being discussed, and she was pretty distraught. She has a daughter who is 17, so she's a juvenile, and that's why we decided not to use her last name to protect her daughter's identity. The daughter has a serious mental illness, and she is on a multitude of medications, including an antipsychotic, and she tends to have rages, you know, where she becomes just very destructive, disruptive. She's hit her mom before. She's broken, you know, as they say, like almost all the doors in the house. And so it can be really distressing for the family. And they, in the past, have called law enforcement. Law enforcement has come. And what Susanna says is they have helped de-escalate the situation with the daughter. They've sometimes helped her take her medication. They've taken her to the hospital when she hasn't wanted to go. But then all of a sudden in February, this incident occurred in the night. They were trying to sleep. The daughter came in and spit in Susanna's husband's face and said, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to stab you. Susanna says she saw her daughter then run and come back towards the bedroom with a kitchen knife. And the husband called 911. And he says he wanted them to come. The daughter was already on probation. He told them that. And he was willing to press charges. And what he says is they just said, sorry, that's not enough of a crime. You know, call us if it escalates more, and recommended they stay in the locked bedroom. Susanna and her husband were in a locked bedroom while this was happening. And for them, it just felt like what has to happen? You know, how far does this have to go? If a crime has to be in progress, well, that certainly, for obvious reasons, could be problematic.
Let's take a listen to some of what she told you.
At that moment, you're not thinking like, oh, they're not coming out for mental health calls. You're just thinking we need to get help here now before this escalates further. And they just refuse to come out. It's scary when you're in that situation, and it feels like that nobody wants to help. If they were to call the fire station, which they didn't, they're not going to come in because she's in the house with a knife, and it's not safe for the fire department either. So who is going to assist my family? So you're telling me you guys are going to do anything until like one of us are dead or somebody's really hurt? My husband mentioned that to the officer, and he was just like, if that's how you feel, you should get a restraining order on her when she turns 18. Which is, you know, it's not plausible, it's not healthy. Get a restraining order and then leave her what, on the streets to roam around, you know, with mental health illnesses to add to the homeless population? Like, it doesn't make sense. They should be the ones transporting or assisting or helping or training their officers for situations like this.
So what did you learn about the resources that should be available to people like Susanna in a moment of crisis like that?
Well, what I found really fascinating about this piece, and why I wanted to jump in, you know, Sheriff Cooper said he did want to have a conversation, but there is kind of a silver lining. He mentioned 988. You know, that's a national suicide and crisis hotline. Sacramento County, thanks to WellSpace Health, which actually runs 988, has a pretty robust 988 line already up and running. This decision has now escalated like integration, so they can do a transfer directly from 911 to 988. Sacramento County also has these civilian teams of a clinician and a peer. They're called community wellness response teams in Sacramento County. And so those folks, you know, a lot of people, as he said, don't want a uniformed officer. So they can try to resolve these issues first. There are specialized paramedic teams that can also do that. And so that's all good. And I think those are all considered best practices that other departments are employing, but they do it in coordination with law enforcement. And that's the difference.
When you talk to first responders, other ones like firefighters and paramedics, what have they told you about how this is impacting their job and the work that they do?
Well, Sacramento Metropolitan Fire District, otherwise known as Metro Fire, has been particularly concerned because, you know, as they say, their job when someone is in distress and they're called out is to help that person. But they have had to, and I've seen the documents of some of these calls, they've had to just leave people in distress because they didn't feel the situation was safe enough for them to enter. And that for them is kind of personally heartbreaking, but they can't risk their own safety. And the same is true of some of the clinicians. These are a minority of cases where the clinicians feel that they need backup or someone who's a danger to themselves needs to be helped, you know, if there's an imminent suicide. And if law enforcement isn't going to back that up, that's really distressing.
Let's take a listen to Metro Fire Battalion Chief Parker Wilborn.
This is something that was rolled out with very little notice. Many of our crews came on shift that weren't on shift when this was implemented, only to go two calls and not be backed up. And in their eyes, they're thinking, well, what's going on? The community called 911. We have a duty to respond. We are here to serve and protect our community, and we're not able to do that. And so when we talk about not being able to go and meet that person that's inside the house that's having that crisis, that's not something we're used to doing. For 25 years as Metro Fire, when somebody calls 911, we make patient contact, we help them, and then we go home to our families.
I'm thinking about a conversation we had on Insight not too long ago, about a week or two ago, with Yuba-Sutter County. They have a mobile crisis response, and this is part of a state law that requires counties to launch mobile crisis teams. And this is part of that larger shift of moving away from a one-size-fits-all approach in responding to an emergency, and especially in instances where law enforcement may not be the best fit. Doesn't that exist in Sacramento? What's different about Sacramento County?
Well, Sacramento does have these the CWRT teams, and those are a clinician and a peer. So if you call 988 and they say, oh, we can't resolve this over the phone, they can send that team out. But again, that team can't go to certain types of incidents if they feel that it isn't safe. There are also what are known as co-response teams, where clinicians ride with law enforcement, and those kind of fill the gap when you actually need a law enforcement presence, but you want the clinician to be the person who's doing the de-escalation and the evaluation. It's very hard to recruit clinicians for those roles, but Sacramento County does have, I think currently, four clinicians out of 12 positions that are budgeted. Sheriff Cooper had two, but now those have been reassigned to other law enforcement agencies in the county that can make better use of them because of his policy shift. But those are, you know, some of those, that is sort of the glue that fills in that little extra piece when you do need law enforcement there, but you don't want them coming alone.
You know, finally, Lee, I mean, what you're really hitting at is this gap or this debate when it comes to public safety versus healthcare and how they should interact with each other and when one is appropriate over the other. What do you hope the public takes away from this reporting and what you're raising?
Yeah, I think I really do view it as an opportunity to dig into these collaborations more deeply, because it is absolutely true that, especially in communities of color, people do not trust law enforcement to be the first responder. But I will say that, you know, Sheriff Cooper is, I think, well-intentioned when he says he doesn't want to criminalize. But if you're leaving people without any response, then there's a higher likelihood that there will be another incident and they will end up in his jail. And actually, Susanna's daughter did end up arrested in April, and she was taken to juvenile hall, you know, whereas if there had been a different crisis response team that night, then, you know, maybe they would have taken her to the hospital instead.
Mm. Well, Lee, thank you for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Lee Romney is an independent journalist discussing her piece in CalMatters, looking into the growing number of law enforcement agencies, including the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office, who are not responding to nonviolent mental health calls and the impact that is having on those in need of help. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.